So the theme of the group is happiness and happiness. And the Buddhist tradition teaches there's two kinds of happiness, the happiness of mood, and this happiness comes and goes with conditions, and the happiness of understanding, which is lasting happiness, which doesn't depend on conditions. And this happiness primarily is due to the perceptual shift that we're not separate. We truly belong to everything, to all of creation. And all of our pain ultimately boils down to this belief in separateness. It's a fundamental disease of loneliness that we think we're separate. And because unconditional happiness is the lasting happiness, it's the aim of Buddhist practice. And the dedicated group I'm going to lead is going to be unique in really emphasizing both kinds of happiness, the happiness of mood, as well as the happiness of understanding. So to say a little bit about happiness of understanding, which is unconditional happiness. And the Vipassana teacher Shinzen Young says, the greatest favor we can do ourselves is to come to a state where our happiness is no longer dependent on conditions. Just imagine that. You're happy no matter what. Conditions come and go. You get what you want, you get what you don't want. It's a good day, it's a bad day. You're good with it all. You know, it's all good. I don't like that saying because it's really not all good, but there's a place where it can be all good. And Shinzen Young says, you know, very simply, happiness independent of conditions occurs whenever we have a complete experience. So whatever is happening, if you can have a complete experience of it, that is what unconditional happiness is. It's not so much what's happening, it's our relationship with what's happening. And freedom is really kind of the opposite of what we think. We're not free of something or away from something. We're free with something. We actually experience our everything more fully, and we're more deeply in it. And that's actually where we find our freedom. So I like to say that if you're stuck in a stall with a kicking horse, where's the safest place to be? On the horse. It's the only place you can't get kicked. So we have to actually, the thing we're afraid of, we have to really turn towards it and get much closer to it. And we find our freedom within all of our challenges, our problems, our trouble. And it really means this hospitality of heart where we're willing to be with whatever's happening, fear, sadness, anger, love, excitement, passion. And we do this through our practice of mindfulness. And with mindfulness, what happens is we get much closer to our experience and we get much bigger than it. The distance we feel in our minds when we're mindful of something, it's not the distance of separation. It's the distance of being bigger. We open up to a vast space of mind where we can accommodate it all. Space accommodates everything. And through mindfulness, we experience this kind of unconditional spaciousness of mind. And everything can happen. So to have a complete experience of something is when we're free with that thing, not from the thing, with the thing. And this complete experience, I mean, it's so simple. If you're suffering, it's because you're not fully experiencing what's happening. And fully experiencing what's happening really means our mindfulness has staying power. We're not just mindful of our experience, but there's this deep concentration where the mind is steady in our mindfulness. Our mindfulness has total staying power. And Shinzen writes, any ordinary sensory event, when experienced completely, becomes extraordinary and paradoxical. Even a breath, even a step, anything we completely experience becomes extraordinary and paradoxical. Its richness is maximal, but its somethingness is minimal. A complete experience of pleasure delivers pure satisfaction, but has little substance. A complete experience of pain is deeply poignant, but not problematic. A complete experience of desire is free of desire. A complete experience of mental confusion nurtures intuitive wisdom. A complete experience of self convinces you there never was a self. How does that sound? This is where our practice takes us. And you'll notice he really is talking about pleasure and pain. The key issue in life, every issue can be boiled down to some struggle or reactivity with pleasure and pain, which the Buddha called feeling tone. Three feeling tones to every experience: pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And all of our reactivity can be ultimately traced back to some struggle with feeling tone. You know, our teenager's too unruly. Our job is too stressful. I'm not getting enough exercise. You know, like, that's all unpleasant and we don't like it. We're averse to unpleasant. Or we have pleasant experiences and we try to grab them. The sunset's so beautiful, but we try to grab it. And the very grabbing of it, when it's just flow, creates pain. So we could really say enlightenment, awakening, is just very practical. You know you're free if you don't care if the next moment is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so the beauty, the incredible beauty of Dharma practice is that through the practice of mindfulness and kindness, we can experience happiness independent of conditions. We can be okay, even when our knee craps out on us. And mindfulness and love together give us this insight that we truly belong. That's where we really become free. Our freedom comes from deep mindfulness and deep love. So, now, I want to talk about the other kind of happiness, the happiness due to conditions. Of course, we want to emphasize this Buddhist practice of mindfulness. And we're so good at working for trying to get the happiness of conditions that we need to emphasize this happiness independent of conditions. And given how strong our inner critic can be, given how strong the negativity, the bias of the brain is, given how difficult our world is right now, we also need to focus on the happiness of mood. We need to gladden the mind and heart as much as possible. We need to cultivate happy states such as positivity, gratitude, playfulness, joy, passion. All of that, we need so much. And it turns out, doing all this, yes, it makes us happy in the moment and the happiness changes. But what's really interesting about the happiness of conditions is when we gladden the mind and the heart, our meditation practice becomes easier. All these states are really helpful in meditation. If we can cultivate these states in meditation, lighten our minds, you know, focus on things that brighten our minds. It'll make our practice more fun. You'll want to practice more because you'll look forward to it. And your practice itself will be more satisfying because the mind will be able to focus more. So this dedicated group is going to emphasize, you know, straight up mindfulness practice for the unconditioned happiness, but also practices such as sympathetic joy, practices such as mindful movement, mindful play, mindful humor. All of this then serves our spiritual path because it makes us more motivated to practice. And so this happiness of mood then serves the happiness of understanding. We'll meditate more, our mind will be more focused because there's more joy in our life and in our practice. And then that helps us, our mindfulness, have staying power, and it'll help us have complete experiences. So I'm gonna just kind of end where we're sort of at the end here, so I get people will need to leave. I thought what I would do is, this is really just a coda. I've been on retreat. My dad died about 9 months ago, and age 90, he had a good death. And I thought I would tell some stories about my dad. They really lighten my heart. And so stick around if you want to hear a few lighthearted stories. And if you have questions about the dedicated group, I'll stick around for that too. So my dad was almost 90 when he died, and he lived a really good, full life. He had a good death. He was born in Camden, South Carolina, and then I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dad was in the oil business, in the pipeline business, actually. And Tulsa, Oklahoma was a pretty rough and tumble world. And Dad was, you know, a bit macho in that world. And he raised a sensitive kid like me, though. Dad was, you know, macho, but very loving, and had a lot of integrity and a lot of courage. He was really, his dharma was the dharma of doing in the world. And he was really good at doing. He sort of became a leader, whatever he did. And he was good at leading people. He didn't micromanage people. He let people make their own mistakes. He trusted people. So my eulogy to Dad, here's my first paragraph from my eulogy. How did a guy who loved hunting so much, he would wake up before dawn to go to the duck marsh before a day of grade school, just so he could hunt. Who worked for decades in the oil patch in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who could drink scotch and smoke cigars with the best of them, raise me, a vegetarian, Buddhist, psychotherapist. And I go on, all of my siblings, we all are very different, all because really my dad was so open-minded and respectful and letting us make our own mistakes. So just a few dad stories. We have a big tradition in my family of telling stories. So, you know, my dad was kind of large and in charge in his life. He was used to being the boss of things. And he wasn't, when I was younger, very good at coming down to our level. But, you know, he tried to his credit. And we grew up fishing and hunting because my dad liked it so much, but we all really turned to backpacking. And my brother ended up as a leader of Knowles National Outdoor Leadership School. We were really into camping and backpacking. And we took my dad on a backpacking trip to Big Bend National Park in Texas. And he was just not used to his kids telling him what to do. And so we packed his pack all wrong. We're like, Dad, you know, you have to pack your backpack, put all the lighter stuff on the bottom, the heavy stuff on top. It'll be a lot easier to walk that way. Oh, and speaking of walking, you know, when you don't step off the trail, because in the desert, the soil is really fragile, and we don't want to create any erosion, you know, okay, I'll stay on the trail. Okay, you know. And then dinner time comes and dad starts to wash his dishes and we're like, dad, you can't just, you know, dump all your leftovers on the ground, you know, like we don't want to affect wildlife. So you have to just, you know, strain all your food out of your water in this. And dad's like, okay. And then finally, you know, we're sitting there around dinner and dad's like, well, better go to the bathroom. You know, he starts to get up and my brother Jamie says, now dad, okay, so this is the desert. So when you take a poop, you just, and dad's like, boys, enough. You know, you can tell me how to pack my pack. You can tell me where I can or cannot step. You can tell me where to put my food scraps, but nobody's gonna tell me how to take a dump. So that was my dad. He tried, he had his limits. Another story about my dad, also a camping trip, but this was more dad style of camping. Dad and some friends and my brother and some of my friends, my brother's friends were all on a camping trip, but it was luxury camping, these big platform tents with cots inside the tents. And dad is just snoring away. There's like six people sleeping in a tent. And my brother's, Jamie's, his friend Perk just wakes up. Jamie's like, Jamie, you got to do something about this. I mean, your dad is snoring so loud, nobody can sleep. And Jamie's like, okay. He's totally bleary eyed. It's pitch dark in the tent. And so Jamie like kind of crawls over to where my dad is and just can't see anything. And, you know, grabs dad to shake him awake, but he grabs my dad right where no man ever wants to be grabbed to be woken up. And dad bolts up and yells, my nuts! Jamie had grabbed him right in the gonads. And then everybody in the tent wakes up and my brother's friend, Perk, he starts doubling over in his cot and he's laughing so hard, his cot tilts and shoots him out of the tent, off the platform, because the bottom of the tent was unzipped, and he just shot out of the tent, and everyone like runs out, you know, Perk, are you okay? He was fine. He only fell a few feet, but he was still laughing so hard. So my dad was such a doer. I tried to explain meditation to him. He did not get this meditation thing at all. And we had a meal one night at a Chinese restaurant. And dad is just like, now explain this to me. Like, you just sit there. I'm like, yeah, you just sit there, dad. And you feel your breath. Well, what's the point of that? And it's like, well, dad, you know, it's just a whole different way of, you know, being. You're actually learning how to be. You know, dad, you're really good at doing, but do you know how to be? And, you know, dad kind of was like, well, yeah, you got a point there. And, you know, I said, you know, ultimately, dad, meditation is about doing nothing. And dad's like, well, that just goes against everything I've ever learned in my life. And I'm like, I know, dad, I know. And, you know, early on, when I started meditating, dad was very Christian. He just didn't understand the Buddhist thing at all. And he didn't like it that, you know, I was doing another path. And we had this very tense discussion about the merits of Christianity, the merits of Buddhism. And, you know, this was a conversation where we were each trying to win, trying to convince the other person of our point of view. It was not working out. Finally, the fortune cookies came. And dad read his fortune. I read my fortune. I showed my fortune to him and he burst out laughing because his fortune, he showed it to me and we got the exact same fortune, each of us. And our fortune said, silence will be your best reply. So I don't know if the waiters were conspiring or not, but, and, you know, we might say at some point there was a turning point in our relationship where silence was our best reply. We stopped trying to convince each other of things and started listening more. The last story to tell about my dad is just the last months of his life, you know, had been really, he was able to die at home, which was amazing. But his life consisted of getting up out of bed, which was a process, you know, till 11 a.m. or so. And he would go in his walker and he would go over to the living room to his favorite chair and he would plop down and sit there for the rest of the day. And then at 9:30 or so, you know, he would go on his walker back to his bed. And this is a guy who was a total adventurer and world traveler. And he and my stepmom just had so many adventures together. And his life was reduced to a postage stamp. And so one day, I just feeling so much compassion for him. I'm like, Dad, how are you doing? Like, you know, how's it going? And he's like, Peter, I love my life. And I was really surprised by him saying that. That was his life, literally those 30 feet between his bed and his chair. But he was a happy camper. And the way I think of it is Dad lived his life to the fullest. You know, he had thoroughly kind of burned, it was like a hot flame that had completely burned itself out. No residue. When it was time to go, it was time to go. I never heard him complain. It was amazing. He had a lot of health challenges. So thank you, Dad, for being my role model for so many years. I'll end the talk there.